Joe Courtney of the beautiful 2nd Connecticut District, Long Island Sound, beautiful area, home of Plum Island and many other spectacular places. So let me start with you and ask you about foreign policy. So let's go to Kim in North Korea. Does this president have any idea what he's doing when he goes and embraces and calls a best friend a North Korean dictator, one of the, if not the worst in the world?
Again, it's, you know, I think you described it pretty powerfully about the fact that, you know, this guy is a snake, you know, that he's interacting.
Which one?
Well, again, Kim clearly, you know, who executes family members and, you know, starves his population, you know, to prop up a corrupt regime and who is, you know, unbelievably erratic. However, I mean, the one thing about Kim that, you know, makes him worthy of our attention is just the fact that he does have nuclear weapons. I mean, unlike Iran, you know, this guy has at least 60 warheads and has demonstrated missile capacity to you know, be very destructive with them. So, you know, it's a problem which I remember President Obama, when he met with the House Democrats before he left office, saying that, you know, the two issues that he tried to talk to and convey to Trump when they had that, you know, one meeting before Trump was sworn in, was that, you know, the issue of immigration and Dreamers are ones that he, you know, has got to fix in the right way. And number two, North Korea is the problem that has been the most thorny in terms of trying to denuclearize, you know, that country. So to the extent that, you know, Trump gambled and threw out this idea of a meeting face to face, and that if that creates an environment where we can do, you know, make some more progress in terms of dismantling his nuclear capacity, as David Ignatius from the Washington Post, you know, opined this morning, and there isn't anybody better, in my opinion, than Ignatius in terms of, you know, these foreign policy issues. You know, we have to kind of, in some ways, kind of just turn our eyes away from just the, you know, vision of these two together and understand that if it actually is going to help, you know, negotiate a better path forward in terms of North Korea, then you know, we have to support it, because it really is just, you know, what was going on there in terms of firing not just short-range missiles but now long-range missiles with those warheads on it, and you know, impervious to any kind of outreach even from China and Russia, Kim, that is. You know, if there's a way to use this sort of bizarre reality TV form of foreign policy in this particular instance to help reduce risk, then, you know, then we've got to at least let this thing play out and hope that it turns out well. Again, I'm not real confident in his team that he has with him. Pompeo and Bolton, you know, are, in my opinion, enablers of reckless high-risk conduct, and that is of concern. I wish it was Mattis, you know, that was there advising him, you know, at this point.
Indeed.
But there's going to be, you know, follow-on meetings after yesterday's media event, photo op, and to the extent that he's not firing missiles, that's good for our allies in South Korea and Japan, and as Ignatius said, you know, maybe in a, you know, very kind of accidental way, this has created an environment where maybe some good can come out of it.
Well, one of the things I love about you is that you're on the Armed Services Committee.
Yep.
And have your ear to the ground on this. Now, I certainly understand what you're saying about sometimes you have to deal with, you know, reprehensible enemies in terms of making a deal that will make you safer. On the other hand, it does look now, at least from the leaks that we're hearing, that this president is willing to give up the store and not to stick with any of his ideas about what he wanted in terms of denuclearization, and is basically saying, okay, whatever you want, you can have, that'll be it.
Well, you have to look no further than his interaction with Putin, you know, at the G20 summit to show that you're totally on target, Alan, because the fact is that, you know, he... joking with Putin about the Russian interference with the democracy, you know, saying nothing about the fact that, you know, Russia seized those three Ukrainian ships in international waters. There's 24 sailors that are now in a prison in Moscow, and the U.S. says nothing in terms of an ally of ours. They're not a NATO ally, but they're certainly an ally. And frankly, there's a bigger issue, which is just freedom of navigation and maritime rule of law, which Putin and Russia blatantly violated. And by the way, the UN Tribunal for Law of the Sea issued their ruling at the end of May, confirming that fact and ordering Russia to release those sailors. Unfortunately, they don't have a international Law of the Sea treaty police to enforce orders. They have to use sort of diplomatic means to enforce these orders. But Putin just totally blew it off. And seeing the president of the United States sitting there yucking it up with this guy, as you point out, shows that there really is no, sort of central core principled direction or vision in this administration's foreign policy. It's really all about just sort of reacting and trying to, position himself as this sort of grand puppet master with tyrants and autocrats in terms of how the world is divided up and operates. And that's not U.S. foreign policy in any tradition or principles that we've followed for centuries, and it's really it's an issue that's hard to really, I think, activate voters on, but it frankly in some ways is the issue of the day in terms of what a second term Trump administration could do to world international norms, particularly democratic norms.
Let's go there from there, Joe Courtney, to Iran. Obviously, from the very first moment, he decided Iran was going to be the boogeyman. Now, I have to be honest with you, and I'm sure you will be with me, the Iranian leadership has not been a good group of people, no question. But, neither have a lot of the other people we're playing with, Kim or the Russians, as you've just suggested. Yep. Is his different way of dealing with Iran putting us into an even more difficult situation in the Middle East, where his inexperienced son-in-law is supposed to be coming up with right. solutions to Middle East peace?
So, again, if you look at, where the country, where we were, before before Trump tore up the Iran nuclear deal, we had a situation where all our allies were united with the U.S. We had U.N. Inspectors on the ground with the highest detection equipment, highest quality detection equipment, watching every move that was happening there. There was confirmation from every source, including Israeli intelligence, that Iran was not violating any of the limits that were put on them by the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And then just the president gratuitously, against the advice of Mattis, against the advice of McMaster, tore up the nuclear deal. They're gone. And now you've got two Iran hawks that, have done nothing but try and, in my opinion, worsen the situation by overhyping, incidents and activity that's happening in the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman. So I've been to a number of briefings, but because of the committee I'm on, as you pointed out, number one, that whole area has always been contested waters. We have a large naval presence in Bahrain, right in the Persian Gulf, and I've been there twice. I've talked to some of these guys who are out there patrolling these waters, again, with one mission only, to just protect, innocent passage and freedom of navigation, period. It's not to take sides, with the different contending forces that are there right now. And the notion that, and they've always run into incidents with Iranian, hotheads that have, buzzed our ships and, made aggressive moves out there, and luckily we've got really talented, smart captains that avoid that, are very smart and practiced in terms of de-escalating these types of situations. So that stuff is going on all the time. For Pompeo and Bolton to be hyping some of these incidents into something that, like it's different right now, and that there's a U.S. national interest in terms of imminent danger to us as a grounds for a military strike. And let's face it, 2 weeks ago, we know planes were in the air. Stuff was getting locked and loaded until Trump had a change of heart. You know, this is not, you know, a way of reducing the risk of conflict over there. In a war with Iran, which, you know, I think our guys are capable of doing, you know, great work in terms of having to protect our troops and our assets that are over there, but no one knows where that will end. And that's, you know, that's the fundamental lesson of the war in Iraq, is that when Bush went in, no one asked the question, how does this end? As David Petraeus famously said, you know, when he was asked to kind of try and clean up the mess there after the first 3 or 4 years. That's the question you have to ask when you talk about use of military force. And these guys, they're not asking that. And then, in fact, they're doing nothing but inflaming, you know, the risk of conflict there, that it does nothing to denuclearize Iran. And it's just pushing away our allies, by the way, in terms of our European friends, and you know, isolating the U.S. and trying to figure out to say that we can solve this problem of Iran by ourselves is just you know, exactly the wrong direction we should be headed.
I always love talking to Congressman Joe Courtney, Democrat of Connecticut's beautiful 2nd District. Been in office since 2007, and I never run out of questions to ask him because, you know, one thing always does lead to another. Joe, when we come back the next time, we'll pick it up.
Great. Thanks, Alan.